So, Steve, for the people who've never seen your office, could you just describe it a little bit?
It's a nightmare. There are stacks and stacks of books, 4 feet high or more. And also I have three floor-to-ceiling bookshelves and lots of paper strewn around my desk. And it's extremely crowded with not one inch of extra space.
And how many stacks deep are those stacks of books?
Oh, some of them go maybe 3 to 4 stacks deep.
And what are you doing with all those books in your office?
There are treasures in those books, and I have a hard time letting go. And I will say that every so often I do big book purges and get rid of a lot of the books, send them off to the library, kind of at the point when it gets to be too much and I feel like the books are taking over. And I'm actually at that point right now. I just haven't had time to do it.
Can you keep track of what's in there? I mean, do you remember the books that you have stacked up?
More or less. There's an archaeology to this. So the things that are closer to the top, the stacks that are closer out to me are the ones that are more recent, the ones that I am kind of looking at periodically that I can refer to. And then every so often, I actually have to go searching for a book. And so I go through them to find the one that I need.
What do you imagine is in those books for you? Why do they need to stay at your fingertips?
Well, I'm a big believer in a personal library. And I love the idea. I mean, I cannot tell you the thrill that it gives me to have books that matter to me at my fingertips so that I don't have to run off somewhere, I don't have to go to a bookstore or a library, that they're right there that I can find. If I can find them, that is the trick. And I will say that I have a somewhat similar version of books at my house, at least in one particular room. I just feel like there are wonders of the world there.
And is it something about not trusting your own memory that you want to have the books on hand?
I don't know if it's really about memory. I don't have a particularly great memory, but I couldn't possibly remember all of the things that are in these books. So I want to be able to refer to them, including books. And part of the underlying idea of this for the books in my office is I'm thinking, you know, maybe we'd use this for a future interview. Mm-hmm. So there's always the possibility that we could use this at some later date. There are also books that interviews that I've done that I want to hang on to because I think I might want to refer to them at some point.
You said you don't want to go to the bookstore. You don't want to have to go to the library. But a lot of that information eventually ends up online anyhow. So really all you would need in theory is a tablet of some kind, not even a keyboard. What is it about the book for you?
I read a printed book totally differently than I read a screen. When I'm reading something on a screen, I skim. I can't read it closely. And I'm consuming information there, whereas with a book, that's the kind of thing I want to curl up with it in bed. And it has some deeper meaning to me. And also, if I read books that are work-related, nonfiction, I typically underline.
I wonder if it's something about how books are not transient. You can't just delete a book. I mean, I guess you can donate it to the library. You can delete it from your life. But is it something about a quality of permanence to the physical object?
Oh, sure. I love the idea of having this semi-permanent archive of material that I can go to and periodically look back on.
I wonder what you think the difference is between information and knowledge.
Oh, I think there's a huge difference. I think this is a big question for me personally and also for the way I've thought about what I do on To the Best of Our Knowledge. And I mean, just to back up for a moment, if you think about modern information theory, you know, what has brought the digital revolution that we have today? It really came about when early information theorists, those early computer people, stripped meaning out of information. So, I mean, they basically turned information into ones and zeros. Mm-hmm. And that's what launched our modern digital revolution. And that is entirely antithetical to everything that I believe in. And I greatly appreciate this digital world that we have. But I resist information that does not have meaning. I mean, meaning is everything to me. Part of my foundational principle, I would say, for how I think about what we do unto the best of our knowledge is that I don't want to just communicate facts, except in the rarest circumstances. I mean, sometimes facts are just really cool. But almost always, I want to go for ideas. I want to go for the ideas that are behind the information, that are connected to the information, that have meaning, that matter to us. Mm. And it goes back even further than that for me. In the very early days of this program, there was a friend of mine who was listening. He said, you know, Steve, you have a lot of good information on To the Best of Our Knowledge, but I don't hear much wisdom. And that really hit home. And that's always stayed with me. And it's always something that I think about when I'm putting together a To the Best of Our Knowledge show is, you know, maybe we can bring a little bit more wisdom into the world. And, you know, I wouldn't say that every show that we do, certainly not every interview we do, has wisdom in it. But it's a goal. And it's something that matters to me and something I think about.
You know, when I imagine wisdom or I imagine ideas, which you also talked about, they always sound open-ended. They don't sound definitive.
Yes.
Maybe wisdom's a little more definitive than ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You're certainly one of the most informed, broadly informed people I know, and certainly in certain areas very deeply informed. Does all of that information, not data but information, mm-hmm. does it make it more difficult for you to have opinions?
In some ways, I'm actually less concerned about developing opinions myself. And I guess I think that asking good questions may be more important than coming up with the right answers. Often I think there are no definitive right answers. And I think for anyone who listens to the Best of Our Knowledge regularly, you will know that we really don't try to tell you what's right. You know, we try to offer lots of different ideas and let you think about it, let you ponder something. And that's such a primal value for what we do on To the Best of Our Knowledge. And that's my own value. I tend not to be someone who pontificates very much or, you know, is a proselytizer for a particular point of view. I mean, obviously, I have opinions about all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But I would much rather put out an idea there that you have to wrestle with.
I see sometimes in interviews you get delighted about a certain idea, I think. I wonder also if it's thrilling for you in a similar way when two seemingly disparate fields come together. You're kind of grazing information all through all these different disciplines, and then suddenly you see where they link up.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's, I think, for all of us who are producers on To the Best of Our Knowledge, and this happens in the interviewing process as well, is there is that eureka moment when suddenly two things connect, and which you didn't think really had anything to do with each other. It's multidisciplinary, what we do. So it's, you know, anytime that you can bring science and poetry together, or somehow you find some connection to a novel with, I don't know, some aspect of neuroscience, I mean, that's thrilling, thrilling to me. I've kind of realized that as I'm dreaming up, you know, what four or five interviews should go together in a show, it's a very complicated process about how that comes together. It's not, I don't think it's just this linear process where you kind of are thinking, okay, I have this and this, and what do I do now? It's, you know, I'm puttering around at night getting ready to go to bed, and suddenly something hits, and I could use that in the program. Or, you know, I'm reading some article on the web, and I think, oh, this has some connection to these other interviews that I know that we already have. I mean, that's very exciting.
Right. Is it possible to know anything definitively?
Sure. I think the world is full of facts. I think science is based on the accumulation of facts supporting, you know, basic foundational principles. I think there are facts in history that certain things happen. I mean, obviously, one interprets how they happened, why they happened. But, well, yeah, I think there are all kinds of things that are more or less definitive. And I will say, as a journalist, I do not subscribe to the theory that everything is relative and everyone's interpretation is kind of as good as anyone else's. I think one should strive to get as close to the truth as possible. Whether you can actually ever arrive at the ultimate truth is debatable, but I think one can get closer to it.
And maybe part of that getting closer is finding the elegant connections across disciplines.
Sure, absolutely, depending on what the particular issue is.
Yeah. Does our work here ever frustrate you in that you maybe feel a desire to go more deeply or spend more time with a certain topic?
Frustrated. I don't know if I get frustrated by that. One of the joys that I have working on this program is you can keep coming back to something. Right. You can do a whole series on something, which I have done on numerous occasions. So, you know, anyone who has been a regular listener knows that we revisit the subject of science and religion from different angles over the years, because there's always kind of a new angle to it. I'd say I appreciate more the chance to spend a few weeks on a particular subject and learn a lot about it and move on to the next subject. But if there are ideas there that I'm still interested in, I will come back to it at a later point.
Yeah. This is my last question for you. Is there some bit of knowledge or some answer to a question that really would be the 12-point buck for you?
Oh, there are the huge existential questions that that I wonder about. I don't know if that's sort of an information kind of question. You know, the big philosophical, scientific questions. Where does the experience in our minds come from? You know, what's the connection between the physical mechanics of the brain and then what happens in our mind? Huge question, which I'm fascinated by. And that's one question that I come back to over and over, in fact, in a lot of interviews. Those kind of big questions about how the universe works and my place in it, I guess those I come back to.
Mm. Do you actually want an answer to those questions?
I think some of those questions, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if there are definitive answers to some of those, but I want whatever answers there are, I would like to find those.
Because it sounds a little bit like you're in love with the search.
I am in love with the search, yeah. I'm in love with the search, but I would not mind at all finding more answers when they are available.
Great. Thank you.
Sure.
We'll see what that turns into.
I don't know if that was anything that you were looking for.
That was fun.